You're listening to WMUC Digital, College Park. It is now switched over to Mukti. It is 10 a.m. I'm going to play a quick PSA before we get into the show.
No one man should have all that culture, but this club can, you know we got the most, FCA's got GBMs every other Thursday.
FCA at UMD.com.
Activity do you get? The average adult is supposed to get at least 2.5 hours of moderate aerobic activity and 2 days of muscle strengthening exercises per week. That sounds like a ton of time for the average college student trying to balance homework, internships, studying, clubs, friends, and sleeping, right? Well, if you break up your exercise routine into a few minutes here and there each week, it becomes way more manageable, and you'll feel stronger, healthier, and more focused. Some easy ways to do this are taking the stairs instead of the elevator, going to a fun dance class at the ERC, or enjoying the great outdoors by running or biking on the Lake Artemisia Trail.
Thank you.
just heard Anchin Kufu Ayinkash by Hailu Merya and the Dalak Band. Many of you may recognize this song. It blew up on TikTok like a few years back. I remember listening to it my freshman year of college, so like at least 4 years ago. And that was kind of a modern revitalization of the genre we're going to talk about today, Ethiopian or Ethio jazz and groove. There's some different kind of sounds in here, but primarily the jazz part of it. So what is Ethiopian jazz? To start out, it's a combination of Western, sometimes Latin jazz, with Ethiopian sounds, especially like melodies and harmonies. So Ethiopian Orthodox music uses a 5-note scale, and some of the pioneers of the genre, such as Mulatu Astake, who's considered the father of Ethiopian jazz, realized that you could combine this 5-note scale really well with Western instruments. And a lot of songs use this unique modal system called the Kwanyat scale. There are four. So my understanding of these scales is that they're kind of like a different, like there's four different types of kind of songs. The first one is called Tezeta, and there's a lot of songs that are actually named this, and they're kind of like a similar harmony, but they're just kind of recreated and taken on in different ways. So it's not just necessarily the notes, but like actually the order in which they're played. So there's Tezeta, Bati, Ambasel, and Anchihoy. So a lot of times these like jazz and fusion songs kind of use these scales, especially the Tezeta. So you'll hear a lot of the songs have a similar kind of sound / harmony in them, although they may use different instruments, lyrics, etc. And Tezeta means nostalgia. So this comes up a lot as a theme. There's a lot of nostalgic kind of longing type of songs that may represent a longing for like a past or the homeland, which is a big theme when we get to like a lot of people who are exiled or fled the country during the history / politics section of the episode. Yes, there is politics involved in this. Who would have thought? Who would have thought on Mukti we would get into that? Well, hopefully you expected it by now. So what are some instruments that are used in these songs? As you may have heard in the Hailu Merya song, there's definitely like keyboard and piano, a lot of times saxophone, different traditional kind of Western jazz instruments like that. And then there's also the use of some traditional Ethiopian instruments. The masinko is a one-string fiddle. The begena is a harp-like instrument. The krar is kind of like a lyre. Or lyre, L-Y-R-E. Not so sure how to pronounce that in English. And then a washint, which is a flute. So I wanted to play quickly for you all this kind of instrumental sound bite that uses some of these, instruments. Where did it go? Hold on with me now. Okay, I think. Aha. All right. Oh, my tab is muted. No wonder that's not working. Bear with me. Could hear, especially the flute type instrument, the washint was pretty clear in that song, but you can hear the krar and the masenko, so kind of like that stringy reverberating instrument. So just to get kind of a background of some of the sounds you might be hearing in the songs to look out for as we get into the listening portion of the episode. But yeah, so those instruments are often used along with Western ones. And this is really interesting. As I was doing research, I came across a work. Actually, it's a book, and I think she did a lot of articles and interviews and story maps kind of about this topic. But a researcher named Kay Kaufman Shelime, kind of described a lot of Ethiopian musicians as sentinels, or is it centennials? Sentinels. Oh my gosh, guys. I'm flopping. But sentinels, yeah. Meaning kind of how, like, the role of musicians in Ethiopian society is often to guide and guard communities. It also reflects how they historically accompanied troops into battle. So oftentimes the musicians kind of guided the public sentiment, in this case around the dictatorship, which we're going to get into. And oftentimes musicians, as we've seen in other episodes, were some of the first ones to be jailed or martyred or killed by oppressive regimes, because they embodied resistance and they really galvanized communities in times like this. So just thought that's really interesting how she described musicians in that way. And her study was looking at diaspora. So it was looking at a lot of artists who are now in, like, the DC region or across the US, in other areas where Ethiopians typically settled. So yeah, definitely plays a really big role in history and politics. But I think what's really unique about a lot of the Ethiopian jazz is that, unlike some of my other episodes, it isn't overtly political in, like, its lyrics or its message, but it is wholly informed by politics. So what exactly politics am I talking about? Let's get into the history. So let's go back to 1974. There was a revolution, which was spurred by factors like protests about the pay and food in the army, rising prices on different goods. What else? Like feudal society, kind of risings around that. So, like, that was creating, a lot of famine due to, like, different soil degradation factors, and then, like, this kind of overexploitation of the land, trade union strikes, student protests, and fighting Eritrea. So a variety of different factors that spurred a revolution. And from this, the Mengistu regime emerged, backed by, or I guess started by, the military junta, which is known as the Derg. So I'm going to be saying Derg. That's a military junta, like the army or military rule. But they are self-proclaimed socialist regime. And in some ways, they followed a Marxist model, right? So they, as I said, like, Ethiopia kind of had a feudal society for the most part, or for a large part, meaning that there was, like, huge landowners and then, like, peasants working the land for being exploited and not being able to own, like, the actual land that they were tilling. So the socialist regime, one of their big platforms was land to peasants, which honestly was very productive, and it did come into fruition in some sense, and a nationalization of industry as well. However, I read an article by Ken Tarbuck called From Ethiopian Socialist Theory, The Blood on the Wall, in 1992. So in case you're interested, you can look that up. But they lacked a lot of the conditions, really, for a socialist revolution, meaning that they didn't really have a working class. Okay, more of a feudal peasant class dynamic, so it's not really the conditions to have a socialist revolution. And at the same time, it wasn't even necessarily a peasant revolution, right? It wasn't the people working the land that really went up in arms and created this new regime. It was more organized centrally by the government and cities. Another interesting thing, students in the capital had their schools closed and were actually sent to the countryside to help with this land reform and to drive out the feudal lords or the landowners. And they would often drive away these landowners and, like, execute them. And that brings me into, like, the largest issue with this regime, right? It was an oppressive, it was a violent regime. Okay, it was extreme censorship. It was a military dictatorship, right? So there was a kind of a revolutionary subversive party called the Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Party, or the EPRP. They were also considered a leftist or socialist group, and they were systematically killed in a campaign known as the Red Terror. So 55,000 people were murdered in Addis Ababa alone in the 70s. It was student workers, intellectuals, and of course musicians were hunted and killed. Students were just killed on the spot for protesting, even like painting signs, holding flags, even just congregating together. According to John Markakis and Naga Ayale in Class and Revolution in Ethiopia, which is another article I referred to, a 1978 article. And at one point, the army quite literally searched every home in the capital for the EPRP. And then if they found someone that was associated with the party, they were immediately either shot or interrogated. And then, of course, extreme censorship. So there's a curfew of like 10 p.m., all meetings or even social gatherings needed permission to be held. And then the press and the radio, emphasis on radio, were heavily censored, right? And that played into a lot of these defining sounds. So lyrics were like combed through meticulously to see if there's any like anti-government themes. And therefore, a lot of instrumental songs became popular because they didn't have to go through that scrutiny of, are these lyrics having any type of double meaning? Or what, you know, what's going on here. So that's why you hear a lot of instrumental songs during this time, as well as some with lyrics. And sometimes they were kind of a double meaning, and that resulted in some pretty heavy consequences. So we'll get into that as we go on with the episode. But yeah, it was just interesting in general, like this grand contradiction of this regime is that the Derg, the military junta, and the opposition both claim to be Marxist, both claim to be socialist. So it's just kind of interesting. Like you can't necessarily trust someone's ideology. You have to really understand the intentions behind it and the actions taking place. So like the author of this one article, Tarbuck, noted like some leftists from like capitalist countries, so like people in the West, initially supported this regime. But I mean, on further examination, it is a bloody dictatorship. So you can't necessarily just trust it because they, in theory, have a similar ideology to you. So good lesson for us all. All right, now let's get into more of the music. So going back to some of the Ethiopian sounds, if you guys remember the tezeta, one of the Kwanyat scales comes up in a lot of songs. I'm going to play two different tezeta songs, one by Mahmoud Ahmed and the other by Mulatu Astake. And we're going to kind of compare and contrast and then talk a little bit more about the artists who define this genre.
So zarin tenterso nagen imiteo so namnane madso yemetale tezta shi guazuna gmesso yemetale tezta shi guazuna gmesso Renis shen ye hote wate chis kedenji. Odeden shen ye hote wate chis kedenji. Ma barere akatinyi tzita nuji. Ma barere akatinyi tzita nuji. Le gon si hone fikr ne udesta Abesas ko tariu yetele yuleta Alge banyin ni ndimbeo tzeta Alge banyin ni ndimbeo tzeta Tane alone yasa merkebu. Tane alone yachin ket merkebu. Marage fiauma enilenyi wudebu. marage fiao mane nene nyiwodebu It is it and I get it without it take she. It is it and I get it without it take she. Be Jimmy and I'm in the Jimmy and I'm in belly bianchi. Te ramedon in dete me chachi Ajere tizita alere se bachi Estiao sogni leni tehnale bialachi Estiao sogni leni tehnale bialachi Cere bognale tate cetem tognal Elite ye metane in quel fine sagna Te la tete zetane man se astegna Te la tete zetane man se astegna
Thank you.
So you just heard Tezeta by Mahmoud Ahmed and Tezeta by Mulatu Astake. So I initially thought I knew both of these songs before the episode, and I thought they were just like different versions of the same song, like a cover. But that's not the case. It's like a song tradition of having this type of harmony, this type of scale, and then many different artists do their take on it, which I think is really interesting. I don't know if we have the same type of music tradition in Western music that I can think of, where it's not exactly a cover, but it's more just using like a common harmony. But those were both really beautiful, and both instrument, or the last one was instrumental. The first one had lyrics. But overall, I've read that Tezeta, it means nostalgia, and it's kind of like a remembering or nostalgic type of sound. And a lot of people kind of use that to convey kind of a longing and nostalgia for being in Ethiopia. Many of these artists had fled the country during the dictatorship. Mulatu Astake, which is the one I just played, he did remain in Ethiopia. And he continued to make music because he had a lot of respect and popularity from before the Mengistu regime. So that one was interesting. Whereas Mahmoud Ahmed, I'm not so sure what his experience was, whether he fled or he stayed. But Haylu Merya, which is the first artist I played, he moved to, or migrated to DC. And it's really interesting. He was very famous in the country and made a lot of music, but he kind of fell into obsolescence, and he worked as a taxi driver for a long time in DC, driving to and from Dulles Airport. And according to an article by the Sheer magazine called Haylu Merya, the Ethio Jazz Under Censorship, he kept a keyboard in the boot of his taxi. In between fares or at the end of the day, he could be found sitting in the back practicing writing and playing the music he loved. But he did re-find fame. Like, he was put back into the public eye fairly recently, which is interesting, partly because of TikTok, but also himself and many other Ethiopian artists were kind of revitalized through album compilations called Ethiopiques. So this is a really interesting kind of story. So a French guy named Francis Falsetto collected and recorded a lot of these songs by Ethiopian artists during like the 60s to 80s, especially in the 70s, and published them to like the Western world. Now, although it did cause a lot of these artists to gain recognition and some of them like started touring, overall the way he did it was pretty bad he didn't really have the proper channels of giving credit to the original artist, and most of them did not see like a dime from these albums being published and disseminated all across the world. You know, he did introduce the music to other countries, but it really benefited himself financially more than others. So it's really not a great situation. And yeah, I tried not to include too many of his. There are two songs from the album, but I did try to look for like the actual original artists if they were on Spotify or YouTube to play their songs, just because I like the idea of them getting the profit from it. Although a lot of these are, they're hard to find. So it is good that it was disseminated in this way, but in such a kind of a negative way is unfortunate. But next we are going to hear a song by Telela Kebede called Lomi Tera Tera. So I'll go ahead and play that, and then you're going to hear her interesting history.
Thank you.
Okay, you just heard Ene Alanchi Alonorem, I Can't Live Without You, by Girma Hargu. And that song, I think I heard the sound of the washinth, which is like that flute-like instrument. And that's such a calming and beautiful song, like the sound of the wind. And I don't know, the rhythm of it, that's a favorite. I had that already. And I wanted to play it on the show. But the real one I wanted to talk about is the song before that, which is the Lomi Tera Tera song I mentioned by Hailu Meria. So her song is really interesting. So she is the only female artist I have on this playlist. Oh, just kidding. She's the first female artist I have on this playlist, but I did add one at the end who is like a contemporary artist. But at the time, there weren't as many female artists in this like Ethio jazz movement. And it's true, this song wasn't as jazzy as the other ones, but it was super important. So this artist recorded the song by composer Getachew de Balke. And apparently the lyrics talk about like a mother who bore 14 children and kind of laments the loss of her. And this is a reference to Ethiopia's 14 provinces. And the song kind of has a double meaning. Not necessarily just about the mother, but like Ethiopia itself falling apart and mourning the loss of this country was kind of the underlying message. And this artist was jailed for 3 months for singing this song, and the composer for 8 years. So even when it's not super overt or explicit, like music makes a difference. And the reason why people are jailed, because they know that like people will respond to that type of message and be galvanized by it. So I just thought that was super interesting and a really, really good, really good piece. Okay, yeah, so I have a little time left. Before I get into the other ones, I wanted to mention to y'all. So while I was like doing research for this episode, like I think it was last night, I saw an Instagram reel that was like me when like the like Brooklyn guy like wants to talk to me about Ethiopian jazz, and it was like this girl running away, and I was like, bro, I'm like that Brooklyn guy talking about Ethiopian jazz, like this is so embarrassing. But unfortunately, like that is the whole thing of my show. Like, and then it made me reflect on it. I was like, wow, my whole show is just like talking about like the meaning of these like quote-unquote like underrepresented or unknown like genres from around the world. And it also reminds me of an article I recently read in class. I'm in like a food, culture, and power anth class, and it was, we're kind of doing a unit and talking about how in the US like it's so common to kind of consume and try and like cycle through different quote-unquote ethnic cuisines, right? Like, oh my gosh, let me try this new like Burmese restaurant, like I've never had Burmese food before, like let's see how it is. Or, ooh, I never had Ethiopian food, like let me go, or like let me cook this thing to impress my friends. And just like how that kind of like culture, almost like imperial culture, arises not just within like the government, but within like everyday people, like the idea of like consuming and cycling through different cultures, entire cuisine, and how people almost like use it as a commodity per se, which is really interesting. And like, I'm not saying like I'm not guilty of that either, I think, or I'm not even saying that people necessarily have that mentality. It's just like it's part of our culture now, like it's just normalized to kind of be interested in different regions of the world and kind of take their cuisine or take their music or something about them in a way that could be seen as almost exploitative. Or, but I guess like to me, I didn't see it as much as that, but more like we have a lack of culture and traditions in our society. And that's not, I mean, okay, we've heard that all the time, like, oh, Americans, like white Americans have no culture. But, and it, or it's not just white Americans, it's just like a couple things. Like number one, like we're a country of immigrants and the expectation is to assimilate. And that's not just, you know, a uniquely American thing, but you know, you assimilate to the dominant culture and you lose certain practices, language, dress, you're expected to kind of go along with whatever the dominant culture is. But I think like the unique part of it is like we do lack culture and the traditions in the way that, like, you're expected to move away. Like, you don't stay where you're from. Like, you don't have to have culture, like, from a different place. Like, I mean, you don't have to, your culture doesn't have to be a different country. Like, I'm Indian, but my culture isn't necessarily Bengali. It's, I also have a culture of, you know, I'm from PG County. My culture is Maryland. It becomes a reflection of, like, where you are. But, like, we don't even keep that. Like, the expectation is, like, once you graduate college, you move out of your hometown and you create a whole new life for yourself somewhere else. And we don't carry, like, even traditions from our parents or grandparents. So then there becomes a need of, like, all right, we want to consume and share and, like, understand all these different other places and kind of collect them like little tokens because, like, we lack our own longstanding tradition. And that was, like, what the argument was with food. Like, we collect all these different culture food because, like, we don't know, like, we don't have a recipes from our grandparents. We don't use the recipes from our great-grandparents. Even what our mom cooked, like, we see that as, like, you know, not in fashion, not in vogue. So, I don't know, made me examine my own habits, like, about doing this show. And, but at the same time, like, I don't know, two things. Number one, growing up in PG, it's like, you are surrounded by so many different immigrants. Like, PG County is like 25% foreign born. And then if you increase that to add, like, children of foreign born people, like, that's probably like half or more. Like, I mean, myself included, and all of my friends, like, pretty much we have parents from other countries. So it is, like, part of everyday life to be learning about different cultures, trying different foods, seeing different dress and clothing and language. But then also, like, I think there's a difference between consuming mindlessly and trying to, like, understand the history behind it, which I hope I'm doing with this. And I am. So I don't know. For me, like, I think important to examine my own traditions and culture and try to be in that more. But then also with something like this, ensure that it's not like mindless kind of collection or consumption and more understanding the roots behind it, which I hope I'm doing. And I hope that listeners are getting from this. But just interesting, especially with the food thing, like, it's true, like, people don't be having recipes that are passed down as much in the U.S. as they do in other countries, which is unfortunate. Like, we're losing them. So if you're listening to this, ask your mom to teach you her favorite dish and memorize it. And don't forget it. I actually recently just did that for that same class. So I'm trying myself too. Don't worry. All right. Next, we're going to hear Hasabe, My Worries by Ayalu Mesfin. And then we're going to end off with Abe Bayeush by Mekli, which is like a contemporary song. And then that'll bring us to the end of the episode. Hope y'all enjoy.
Asabi chahuno ye ne me sarati, sega enteriso asare badmi. Ame chamalde uhasabe shakmi, ame chamalde uhasabe shakmi. Malke la wade uhasabe ragsmi. Asabi ye, asabi, asabi ye, asabi. Asabi, 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 asab raha asab, atan gela tanye, sarich libla bet lagat adgen, asabi, asabi, asabi. Yasabu, ekzeri ane ura kere
Come on.